compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, 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 hour two is here. It's hard to believe it goes by so fast. Here we are, you and me. The number to dial to be on the program is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I just got a note on Twitter from Eric the Catholic. That sounds like a very noble name. Eric the Catholic, he says, Patrick, gender-neutral Spanish movement has spread to my son's ninth grade Spanish class, and he lives in Carlsbad, California. And the blurb at the bottom of the tweet says, exploring gender-neutral language in Spanish. This is from Pimsleur, that language company that will teach you how to speak a language. Have you ever seen Latinx or Todos? This is so stupid. Todos, the word for all. If it's masculine, T-O-D-O-S, or feminine, T-O-D-A-S. Well, according to this gender-neutral language deal, you would spell that T-O-D at sign S.
Ha ha.
Ha ha. That's what it is. You can't even pronounce it. It's like Latinx. Is that like a bobcat? What the heck is that? I know what it is. I'm just making fun of it because it's stupid. And my response to Eric the Catholic on Twitter, not aimed at him, of course, but aimed at this silliness, is que estúpido. You don't even need a translation for that, do you, sir?
I got that one.
Que estúpido.
So
que tonterías.
I don't speak Spanish, but from what I understand, isn't it a language that uses sex as a defining,
male and female?
Right. It's in the whole language, right? Yep. Everything is masculine or feminine. So are they going to change? I'm seriously asking.
I really think they're trying.
They're going to change the language?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's so Latinx, for example, I scoff at that silliness. And there are people with a straight face who actually use that now. I am Latino, by the way, as you know, and I don't mean to be tedious about it, but I'm half Latino. I'm 100% Mexican on my dad's side. I mean, there's some Spanish in there way back, I guess, but that's my ethnicity 100% on my dad's side all the way back. And I find this laughable because it's so artificial. It's so nonsensical. I mean, todos, the word for all, but instead of the O or the A at the end, you've got to substitute it with the at sign, like from your email. Come on. How would Christopher Walken say that? Come on. I can't even do it. Dum, 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 dum. All right, stop. All right, so anyway, that's my response to Eric the Catholic. Que estúpido. There's nothing else to say. The sad thing is, though, that your ninth grade boys are having to deal with this nonsense. It's malpractice. It's educational malpractice, if you ask me. These people should be held accountable. But they won't be. By the way, you know why they won't be is because enough people keep voting in the wrong people into positions of power, and they just perpetuate this nonsense to kingdom come. It's happening, and it will continue to happen, I think, until people have had enough and they do something to put a stop to it, like, you know, maybe changing the way they vote. That's all.
So are you are you just being a Latinx bigot?
I don't recognize that word. By the way, the word bigot, you might think it's bigote, right, in Spanish? That's not the word. You know what bigote means?
No idea.
Don't look it up. It means mustache. So there is a connection with me with that word, bigote, but it does not mean bigot. It means mustache. FYI. I didn't think it was that funny, but it cracked you guys up.
Yeah, we're laughing.
That's pretty good. Okay, el bigote. Let's go now to the phones. I think we have Terry in Ohio on deck. Good morning, Terry.
You know, men are very visual. They're made different from women. And, you know, most men do struggle to keep their eyes, to have what they call custody of the eyes. And my husband and I, you know, we were looking around for a Catholic book for this. And he's... You know, there's been times where he has looked at other women and just kind of, you know, glanced over and glanced back and maybe glanced over again and So he, you know, wants practical details. So the only thing we could find is a very Protestant book called Every Man's Battle, which is great because the whole book is devoted to that, and it really gives some great techniques. But it's got this undertone of, like, maybe once saved, always saved. You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't talk much about the sin, you know. So anyway, I was wondering, where are the Catholic books? Because this is such a major issue. I've heard priests say that it is by far the most confessed sin of men looking at women wrong or pornography. Now, thank God my husband does not do that.
Okay, I think I get the idea. Catholic.
Yeah, I get the idea. Okay,
well, they're all around you. There's a great number of these books. I'm surprised you didn't just stumble across them because there's so many of them from a Catholic perspective. So let's start with Matt Fradd. F-R-A-D-D is his last name. His website is mattfradd.com. And he has been at the forefront of helping men who have a porn addiction. And not just men. By the way, I should offer you a corrective. This is very much a women's problem too. And it's sort of... sort of a stereotype to think that this is a men's problem. In conversation with Catholic priests over the years, let's say over the last 30 years or so, in having conversations, let's say after a speaking event, we go back to the rectory, have a beer and talk. And I ask them, I say, you know, look, so what are some very common sins that you hear in the confessional? And to a man, it's always the same thing. The most common sin, you know, maybe outside of being angry with my spouse or things like that, is the most common sin seems to be pornography. And it's for women now, maybe as much as it is for men. And it's a sin that's confessed by women very commonly. Now, keep in mind that this is among the people who are actually going to confession. You know, you can imagine that among those Catholics who never go to confession, I would think the prevalence of this sin would be even higher. But in any case, it's not a man's problem only. But back to Matt Fradd. His website, mattfradd.com, he's written at least three books on this topic. The first one is called Delivered, and I would get this one for any man who is struggling with pornography. The subtitle is True Stories of Men and Women Who Turned from Porn to Purity. That would be a very good book. Also, he wrote The Porn Myth. This is published by Ignatius Press. And The Porn Myth gets into, you might say, the psychology behind the effectiveness of porn. The subtitle is Exposing the Reality Behind the Fantasy of Pornography. He wrote another book called The Hardcore Truth. And this, too, is a book not only about the harms and dangers of pornography, but also what goes into making pornography. And how the people's lives who are involved in pornography are typically ruined. I mean, they're always ruined, but in certain ways they can be ruined, not just morally speaking, but health-wise and people losing their lives, etc. So those are three books just by one author. I'd also recommend you check out Steve Wood, and his website is dads.org. He has got a number of resources, and he has for many years. He's been traveling the country giving seminars and things, talking about, among other things, pornography, because that's, as you know, it's a big issue. And so there at dads.org, if you go under his resources section, you'll be able to find books, CDs, and other resources available for men who are having those issues. So go to resources. I'm just there on the website right now. It's at dads.org. And I think he's got them categorized by topic. So if you go into, yeah, so he's got alcoholism, relationships, finances, health, homeschooling. Let's go through some other ones. Marriage, homosexuality, marital sexuality, pornography, sex addiction, etc. There's a lot there. And those are just two Catholic authors who have been prolific in producing material. So, there's a lot there, and hopefully that'll get you started in the direction that you want to go. So I hope that's helpful to you, and thank you for the phone call. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Jill in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. Good morning, Jill.
Hi, Patrick. I am, like many, calling for a recommendation or suggestion. I've heard some calls before about similar to this. I have my husband's niece, one of his brothers, their only daughter. She's early 30s. She, I've been invited to a wedding shower, and their wedding coming up, they delayed because of COVID. However, okay. She's been living with someone and has three children with someone already. Mm-hmm. And the last time I saw them was over a year and a half ago at a Christmas event, and everybody was all goo-gooing over the third child and talking about the wedding and as if everything is fine. And I'm not really sure how to handle it. I want the first baby, I sent a card with a donation to a pro-life organization, you know, congratulating her on choosing life. I'm not sure what to do about this wedding shower. I've already said I couldn't go, and I know we won't be going to the wedding, but I'm not, I want to do something.
Let's back up a step.
Send a book or a card.
Yeah, let's back up a step, if you don't mind, because this is a fascinating scenario. So could you please refresh my memory? What is your relationship with this young woman?
I'm an aunt, but it's my okay. husband's brother's daughter.
Okay, so you're an aunt by marriage. Not by blood, but still, right. You're an aunt. Okay. So you have some right. familial connection with her. How old is she?
She's early 30s, and we okay. don't see them, like I said, maybe at Christmas once a year kind of thing. And this is his brother's only daughter.
Okay. And she was raised Catholic?
No. His brother was. I'm not sure that he's practicing. His wife, I believe, is Lutheran, so I'm not sure. If,
I'm talking about the girl.
I don't think either of them practice.
The girl herself.
No, I don't know if she... I don't think she was baptized or raised Catholic.
Okay. Well, that's a helpful point there, because that does change things a little bit. So she apparently was raised with no faith, or not much of a faith. And so in one sense, she's probably ignorant of a lot of the things that she should be doing. Now, we can hope for the best in that regard. It's hard to say, really. So my advice may run counter to what you thought I might say, but I would support her. I would get her a gift for this child. Now, the third child out of wedlock, yeah, that's a problem, from a moral standpoint at least. But you can show the love of Jesus by giving her something that will help her. You know, whatever it may be, a box of Pampers, some clothing for the child, whatever it may be. And that's a material way of expressing the love of Jesus to somebody who doesn't really know him. And I would say better that by far than to kind of withhold any sense of help or encouragement out of the, you know, the stiff upper lip of the Christian who recognizes that what she's doing is wrong and therefore will not do anything to help her because, well, if I were to send you a box of Pampers, that would suggest that maybe everything is okay. And that's not the message it would send. I think the message it would send is, you know, hey, Jesus loves you and so do I. And I want to help you. You have a little baby. Now, if there's an opportunity to talk about how all of this happened, okay, I'm ready for that. But in the meantime, let me do what I can to help you. So my advice would be to do that, to extend the love of Jesus and to show support and be warm and be loving and let her know that you care. And who knows, maybe you'll be the person that she turns to at some point for some advice. Now, the other thing that you mentioned is, unless I misunderstood you, it sounds as though she's going to get married. Is that correct? Is she going to get things legal and get married to the man who's the father of her children? Because if that's the case, I think that's a double plus. Is that what's happening, or did I misunderstand?
That's the current situation. It's a wedding shower and then a wedding. They already are both police officers. They work. They have the three children
already.
I don't need
those details. I don't need those details about their personal lives. I'm just saying, is she going to get her situation squared away and get married to this man?
She is, but I think it's going to be a civil wedding.
That's okay. I mean, it's a step in the right direction. So that would be my advice. I really do think this is a great opportunity for you to shine the light of the love of Jesus in her life. She may be not expecting it. You know, my aunt, she's Mrs. Catholic, and she probably disapproves of what I'm doing anyway. But when you show up or you send her a beautiful gift and you're smiling and loving and she sees, wow, you know, she really does care. That to me is an open door that maybe you or she can walk through in the future if it happens. And so that would be my suggestion. I think if I were to repeat myself, it would just be repetitious. So I'll leave it at that. But I do hope that's helpful to you, Jill. Something to think about if nothing else. Let's take a break. We're at that point now. We'll take a quick timeout, come back to your phone calls. There is a line or two. There are lines available. Not many, but you can grab one by calling 888-914-9149. I see what you're doing, Cyrus. I totally see what you're doing here. And it's cool. I like it. It makes sense. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
At the intersection of faith and culture, the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Get connected to the conversation. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Cyrus, if they ever do a Starsky and Hutch remake starring you and me, I think that music would work. I think it fits.
I'm down. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad used to have a Gran Torino. He used to own a Gran. It was a super cool car. Anyway, back to business. The number to dial, 888-914-9149. You can reach me in an instant when you call. Well, I mean, you might have to wait online a little bit, but we'll get you on the air with your call, 888-914-9149. I want to share with you an article that's just out in the Daily Mail, a UK paper. Headline, Pentagon scientists invent a microchip which senses COVID-19 in your body before you show symptoms. And I know that everybody who hears the word microchip, especially if you're looking at a picture of Bill Gates, you're probably, you know, a shiver runs down your spine. Well, you know, forewarned is forearmed, right? So here's how it's being reported in this news story from the Daily Mail. Pentagon scientists working inside a secretive unit set up at the height of the Cold War have created a microchip to be inserted under the skin, which will detect infection, and a revolutionary filter that can remove the virus from your blood when it's attached to a dialysis machine. The team at the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, have been working for years on preventing and ending pandemics. That's cool. I like that. I'm not so sure I like the methodology, but they assess the issues and come up with ingenious solutions, which at times appear more from a science fiction novel than from a working laboratory. But one of their recent inventions, they told on Sunday night, was a microchip which detects COVID infection in you before it can, you know, get a hold of you. So once it's in there swimming around, apparently this chip can pick up on it. The microchip is sure to spark worries among some about a government agency implanting a microchip in a citizen. Understandable. Officials who spoke to the 60 Minutes team, this is, you know, 60 Minutes, the news program, said the Pentagon isn't looking to track your every move. And I know what Cyrus is thinking. He's saying, maybe I should play that police song, Every Breath You Take. I'm way ahead of you, Cyrus. A more detailed explanation was not given. Retired Colonel Matt Hepburn, an Army infectious disease physician leading DARPA's response to the pandemic, showed the 60 Minutes team a tissue-like gel engineered to continuously test your blood. The green gel, seen in a lab, contains a microchip which senses when the body is infected. The microchip idea came after the USS Theodore Roosevelt saw 1,271 infections. You may remember that early last year, the USS Theodore Roosevelt, I forget what kind of an aircraft carrier it is. It might be for helicopters, I forget which. But in any case, they had a wild run of COVID-19 that ran through the crew. And that even got the captain of the ship, I think he got fired, because he went public and was talking about how dangerous it is for his crewmen to be exposed to COVID the way they were. I think he got in big trouble for that. But in any case, that's what that's referring to. This retired colonel, Matt Hepburn, he said, you put it underneath your skin, and what that tells you is that there are chemical reactions going on inside the body, and that signal means you're going to have symptoms tomorrow. He said they were inspired by the struggle to stem the virus spread on board the USS Theodore Roosevelt. He said it's like a check engine light. That's an interesting analogy. It's like a check engine light in your car. Sailors would get the signal, then self-administer a blood draw and test themselves on the site. We can have that information in 3 to 5 minutes. As you truncate the time, as you diagnose and treat, what you do is you stop the infection in its tracks. Troops are likely to be highly skeptical of the new invention. In February, it was reported that a third of troops have refused to take the vaccine, citing concerns.
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
Thank you, Cyrus. Hal, open the pod bay doors, okay?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
Yeah. Okay, Hal. Thank you. And my name's not Dave, by the way. The DARPA headquarters are pictured in this article here, showing off a filter that's attached to a dialysis machine. Another invention of Hepburn's team is a filter which is placed on a dialysis machine and removes the virus from your blood. An experimental 4-day treatment was given to patient 16, who is a military spouse who was in the ICU with organ failure and septic shock. And what happens is, in this case, patient 16 made a full recovery because the blood was removed from the body, screened, cleared, the virus taken out, the blood was put back in, and within days, patient 16 made a full recovery. The FDA, for its part, has authorized the filter for emergency use, and it has been used to treat nearly 300 critically ill patients. Another Pentagon agency, the Joint Pathology Institute, studies tissue samples from soldiers and sailors infected with pathogens from all over the world. They have tissue samples from people who were infected with the Spanish flu that killed 50 million people between 1918 and 1920. In their labs, they have tissue from patients infected with the Spanish flu from 100 years ago. It's amazing what they've got here. So they're working on finding ways to make this viable to help people avoid full-blown COVID, among other things. Now, I recognize that the microchip angle is something, the stuff of nightmares for many people. Because for so long, we've been hearing people talk about, well, they want to microchip us. And is that going to be the mark of the beast? And I'm not saying that any of this is the mark of the beast. No, I'm not saying that. But I don't think it's untoward to say that something like this could be used in that way at some point. It seems elementary to point that out. But this is not to say that this is the mark of the beast. In the meantime, they're making advances on trying to thwart the spread of COVID. And if they can do it with COVID, I suppose, because COVID, what is the survival rate of COVID? For people under 60, I think the established survival rate is something like 99%, give or take a percentage point maybe. So 99% of the people survive it. Okay, that's great. Plenty of people have died, but think about the diseases that are far more virulent than COVID-19 and pose a far greater threat if they were to become a pandemic. So maybe there's something to this. And no, I'm not saying go get microchipped. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying this is something they're working on. We'll see where it goes. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Burbank, California, and talk to Maria. Good morning, Maria. Welcome.
Mr. Madrid.
Yes.
My question is, do you know there's a church in the corner where I live, and it has some letters, and I would like to know if you know what that's the meaning of that, because they invited me over, but I wanted to
what
know.
What are the letters?
If it was Catholic. The letters are A, S, B, C. It says ASBC Church.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an acronym. It could mean anything. A could mean apostolic. BC probably stands for Bible Church. I'm not sure what the S might mean, but whatever. It's not a Catholic church. If it were a Catholic church, it would say Catholic on the marquee. So I'm presuming you're Catholic. Is that right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Then you don't need to go to that church. It's not Catholic. They don't have the sacraments.
Yeah. Okay. That's all. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Now, before you go, I just want to ask you a question, if I may. Are you living alone? I mean, are these people kind of becoming your friends? Do you have Catholic friends? Do you have Catholic family near you?
I don't know. My neighbors, I don't know if they're, I don't think they're Catholic. I don't think.
Okay.
We don't really, we talk when, sometimes like hi, but I do have Catholic friends, but I haven't seen them in years.
Okay.
Since I was working.
Do you have family? Do you live alone, or do you, are you married?
No,
do you have children?
I'm married. I have my husband and my children with me, but
good.
We only go to Mass on Sundays.
Well, at least you're going to Mass. That's good. The reason I'm asking you these questions, I realize they're kind of personal, but in the case, especially in the case of somebody who's lonely, of somebody whose friends are not nearby or there's no family around, it creates a real vacuum. Such that when people from a church like that come around, hey, you know, come have coffee with us and we'd love to have you over there. And, you know, there's that friendship component and people need that. It's understandable. And what happens sometimes is a Catholic who's feeling lonely may go to this group just because they want some friendship and some companionship. And then they get drawn in. And then the next thing you know, they've left the Catholic Church, which would be a terrible thing. So that's why I was asking you those nosy questions. I just wanted to make sure that you have a support system of people who love you and care about you so that you don't get drawn into that just because, you know, it would be nice to have friends that, you know, want to get together with you. That's not, it's never a good reason to leave the Catholic Church. In fact, I would say there's there is no good reason to leave the Catholic Church.
I would never leave the Catholic Church.
Good. Okay. Because well, that's why they want to invite you, because they want you to leave your church and go to their church. And I wouldn't do it. I would just, no, I'm very happy. Why don't you come to my church? Let me show you about the fullness of the faith and the Eucharist. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, because my doctor, I just saw him yesterday, just one time, and he's invited me over to some classes that they're going to have, he said. And he said that he was Catholic before, and my heart hurt when he said he left it, and now
press,
I think they're making a new...
Press delete.
Sorry?
Press the delete button right away. Delete, delete, delete. You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. See, what I'm saying is say no. Say no.
Yeah.
Because your doctor is an ex-Catholic. He's now involved in some other church. Whatever it may be, who knows? Mm-hmm. But his goal is to get you to become a member. And this is how it always starts. You know, hey, come join, come to our Bible study or come to our event or let us come to your house and pray with you. I mean, it always starts with something like that. So if I were you, I would have a delete button handy and just delete those invitations. Thank you very much. That's kind of you, but I am so happy. As a Catholic, I love the Lord Jesus Christ. I'm grateful to be in the one true church that he established, the Catholic Church. I get to receive him, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Holy Eucharist and so much more. I could never leave that. But thank you. And why don't you come to my church? That's how I would handle that. Anyway, that's my advice. Thank you for the call. I'm hopeful that that's helpful to other people who are listening. Let's go now to Jennifer in Delaware. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Patrick. I have a question for you about the requirements of infant baptism.
Okay.
My niece, who is she was baptized Catholic and is no longer practicing, she was actually not married in the Catholic Church, and she has a two-month-old, and she is talking about trying to get her daughter baptized in the Catholic Church. So I was wondering if that's even permissible, because she's not practicing and they didn't get married in the church. And the second question to that is she is hoping to have the godparents that she chose were baptized Catholic, but they are also two women in a same-sex relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, that obviously wouldn't work. Yeah. So that wouldn't work. First of all, let's start with what is the church's requirement for godparents? So we'll start there, even though it was your second question. So in order to be a godparent in the Catholic Church, you must be at least 16 years of age. You have to be not only baptized, but you also have to have completed your sacraments of the Holy Eucharist and confirmation. You can't be the parent of the child who's being baptized. And if you're married, you must be married in the Catholic Church. You must go to Mass regularly. So attend Mass on Sunday. Now, obviously, COVID is a little bit different because not everywhere do we find the Sunday obligation still in effect. Most places, it's not in effect, but it's making a comeback. So under normal circumstances, you'd be going to Mass on Sunday, living your faith, which, of course, is not the case in that situation because that merit or that, you know, situation, let's just say, is contrary to the moral teachings of the church, not to mention that it's not a valid marriage in the eyes of the church. There can't be a valid marriage without, at the very least, one man and one woman. Also, the two godparents don't have to be married to each other, and a baptized non-Catholic may not be a godparent, but can serve as a witness along with a Catholic godparent. And then lastly, although this isn't the case in this scenario, non-baptized people cannot serve either as witnesses or as godparents. So with that in mind, this situation is interesting because it sounds like, although this young woman is away from the faith that she at least once had when she was a child, she seems to be making movements that suggest she would like to come back. And she, at the very least, she recognizes there's something important about having her children baptized, which is good. And there's something there that you can build upon. So let me ask you this. Have you had a chance to talk with her about her desire for her children to be baptized and whether or not she would be willing to come back to the practice of her faith herself? Because this is what the church will ask of her. You know, if you want these children baptized, great. We want them baptized too. But you also have to commit to raising them in the faith and bringing them to Mass, etc. Have you had a chance to talk to her about that?
I haven't. I'm actually kind of the black sheep of the family because I am the only practicing Catholic.
Yeah.
So I've kind of been pushed away because of that from the family, and her mm-hmm. sister, or my sister, her mother, came to me yesterday and, you know, told me of her daughter's intentions. And I said, I don't think that that's, you know, permissible. And she thinks her daughter's kind of just doing it for show, you know, because mm-hmm. my sister currently is practicing a non-denominational. So, mm-hmm. you know, she doesn't even really, you know, practice Catholicism at all.
Right.
And she said, I don't know why she would want her to receive the sacrament if, you know, if she's not practicing. And part of me, you know, was kind of like, well, you know, I'm thinking of the soul of the child, and it's like, well, I guess under any circumstance, it would be good to have that child baptized as a Catholic. But at the same time, you know, I don't know if a church would allow it.
No, it probably would not, nor should the church allow that if she's not showing any sign of wanting to raise the children in the faith. That's the sad thing, is that the mm-hmm. children are the ones who miss out on this very important sacrament. And the longer it goes and the more they're raised in this secular or quasi-Christian environment, the less likely it is that when they get older, that they themselves will ask for baptism. So it's really a tragedy for the children, especially. So that's why I'm wondering if, you know, even though you're the black sheep, can you call her up maybe and just talk to her and gently give her some advice and say, it would be wonderful for you to baptize your children, and that's something that Jesus and the church want, but, you know, it will involve your being willing to raise them in the faith. Otherwise, what's the point? Why baptize them in the Catholic Church if you don't intend to raise them in the Catholic Church? It defeats the purpose.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe you can,
I can
win
try.
Her over.
I can try, although she's told me before she doesn't wish to speak to me at all, so.
Oh, well, that puts a different pin job on things.
Yeah.
Well, then maybe there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. And part of the reason I've heard you say before about shaking the dust off your feet when you try to reach out to family members sometimes and they don't want to really listen to what you have to say. Part of the reason I'm the black sheep of the family is because I wouldn't invite my sister and her partner to my wedding 4 years ago. And so the majority of the family, except for my parents and my oldest sister, have kind of shunned me from the family because of it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if part of the reason my niece is thinking of doing it is kind of like a slight, you know, like, oh,
it
I'm
could be.
You know.
It could be. So let's say she goes through with it. And I don't think the Catholic parish would permit this, but let's say they did for some strange reason. Then she could just not invite you. Like, ha ha, you don't get to come to our baptism because you didn't invite, you know, me to yours. I mean, that kind of thing. That's possible. Petty, but possible. So I guess the best advice I can give you in this case is that if your hands are tied, if she said she doesn't want to talk to you or hear anything from you, then yeah, okay, fair enough. Keep praying for her, though. And I was just sharing with some people, what is today? Wednesday? So Monday evening, I was at a kind of a get-together with really dedicated followers and listeners of Relevant Radio here in Orlando, where I'm broadcasting from right now. And this question came up. And, you know, how do you deal with, how do you talk to somebody, whether it's a family member or somebody else, who doesn't want to hear it from you and they just won't listen? Well, I said, well, go to Acts chapter 8. And read the story of the Ethiopian eunuch, which begins in verse 25. And there you see that God sent Philip, perhaps the deacon Philip, in what seems to be a miraculous way. He sent him. He says, rise and go toward the south to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is a desert road. And he rose and went. And behold, an Ethiopian, a eunuch, a minister of the Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, in charge of all her treasure, had come to Jerusalem to worship and was returning, seated in his chariot. He was reading the prophet Isaiah. And the Spirit said to Philip, go up and join the chariot. So you can see God is directing his every step here. So verse 30, Philip ran to him and heard him reading Isaiah the prophet and asked him, do you understand what you are reading? And he said, how can I unless someone guides me? And he invited Philip to come up and sit with him. Now, the passage of the scripture which he was reading was this, as a sheep led to the slaughter or a lamb before its shearer is dumb, so he opens not his mouth. In his humiliation, justice was denied him. Who can describe his generation? For his life is taken up from the earth. And the eunuch said to Philip, about whom, pray, does the prophet say this? About himself or about someone else? Then Philip opened his mouth, and beginning with this scripture, he told him the good news of Jesus. And as they went along the road, they came to some water, and the eunuch said, see, here is water. What is to prevent my being baptized? So he commanded the chariot to stop, and they both went down into the water, Philip and the eunuch, and he baptized him. And when they came up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord caught up Philip, and the eunuch saw him no more, and went on his way rejoicing. But Philip was found at Azotus, and passing on, he preached the gospel to all the towns till he came to Caesarea. Now, the importance of this passage is this was somebody that the Ethiopian eunuch didn't know. So my advice, as I said to the folks that I was talking with at this get-together the other night, is when you find yourself in this situation where your daughter, your son, your sister-in-law, your coworker, whoever, won't listen to you. Maybe they won't listen to you because it's you. Okay, whatever. Pray that God would send a Philip into the life of that person. Just pray every day. And you may not know in this life who that Philip might be. But God will be faithful. And if you pray and ask him to send a Philip, or maybe many Philips, into the life of that person that you just can't reach, don't be surprised if it happens. And it may be only in heaven will that person thank you and say, only, you know, I realize that you were praying for me. Thank you for doing that. I hope that helps. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show and your phone calls right after this. The number is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We are back, and thanks for listening. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call and be on the program. 888-914-9149. I just want to show you something. It's on my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid, if you want to take a look at it. And this is a picture of a volcano that's erupting. It's very dramatic, and I don't know how they filmed this. It looks like it's a drone picture because it's zooming in, but it's a very amazing picture. I've never seen a picture like this of a volcano. You can see the rivers of lava flowing out of a kind of a gap in what looks like the crater. It's all black around it, but the spectacular explosions in this lava and the way the lava is flowing, it just reminded me, not just this moment, but it reminded me of the vision that the Blessed Virgin Mary gave to the three children about hell. She showed them a vision of hell, and I'll read that to you. I'll read it to you right now, as a matter of fact. But I would suggest you take a look at this. I mean, it's not hell, obviously, but it sure reminds me of what Mary showed the children. So here's what happened. So Our Lady told the children, she said, make sacrifices for sinners and say often, especially while making a sacrifice, O Jesus, this is for love of thee, for the conversion of sinners, and in reparation for offenses committed against the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And as this was described by Sister Lucia long after the fact, she described the vision in this way. As Our Lady spoke these last words, she opened her hands once more, as she had done during the two previous months. The rays of light seemed to penetrate the earth, and we saw as if it were a sea of fire. Plunged in this fire were demons and souls in human form, like transparent burning embers, all blackened or burnished bronze, floating about in the conflagration, now raised into the air by the flames that issued from within themselves, together with great clouds of smoke now falling back on every side, like sparks in huge fires without weight or equilibrium, amid shrieks and groans of pain and despair, which horrified us and made us tremble with fear. It must have been this sight, she said, which caused me to cry out, as people say they heard me. The demons could be distinguished by their terrifying and repellent likeness to frightful and unknown animals, dark and transparent like burning coals. Terrified, as if to plead for succor, we looked up at Our Lady, who said to us so kindly and so sadly, you have seen hell, where the souls of poor sinners go. To save them, God wishes to establish in the world devotion to my Immaculate Heart. If what I say to you is done, many souls will be saved and there will be peace. Now, among the things that she told the children, by the way, is that a great number, maybe even the majority of those souls who go to hell, she said, go to hell because of sins against purity and chastity, FYI. So my advice would be, take a look at this. You'll find it on my Twitter feed. It's from a handle on Twitter called Space Explorer, but it's this volcano. It's the one in Iceland that's erupting right now. And when you see it, I think you'll see why, for me at least, it's reminiscent of that revelation, or that vision rather, that Mary gave to the children about hell. Now, I want to touch on that point briefly before we press on. And my number, by the way, is 888-914-9149. I'd love to talk to you, so call me now. We'll get you on the air with your question. But I just want to pause and remind you, there are people who, for whatever reason, some misguided sense of whatever, will tell you that hell doesn't really exist. Or, yeah, okay, if it exists, there's probably nobody really there. God is a loving God, they'll say, and he would never send anyone to hell. Ergo, either hell doesn't really exist, or, yeah, okay, maybe it's there. All right, maybe Hitler's in there, or maybe, you know, Saddam Hussein, or you pick your poison. But most people never go to hell, okay? That's not true. It's not true. It's never been true. In fact, if you were to do a survey of the four Gospels, you'll find that Jesus warns about hell, I think it's numerically, more often than he talks about heaven. In other words, more often than he talks about going to heaven and being in heaven, he warns even more frequently about the danger of going to hell. So Jesus himself talks about hell, talks about the reality of hell, talks about the people who go to hell. And of course, that's just in the four Gospels. Remember what he said, the road is wide and many travel it that leads to perdition, that leads to hell. He says the gate is narrow and few find it that leads to eternal life. So strive, strive to enter by the narrow gate, he says. So just remember, if you ever hear somebody telling you, well, you know, hell, come on, that's not real, or it's not really something you need to worry about because God is loving and he's not going to send you to hell. Come on. That is not true. And it's, you know, for some people, it's what they want to hear. Well, it's, I think, what all of us want to hear. I'd love to hear that if it were true. But sadly, it's not true. So just be aware of that. And also remember what St. Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 5. He says, the devil is like a roaring lion prowling around looking for someone to devour. That's another way of saying he wants to drag souls to hell with him. And then last thing, I'll just ask you this kind of a thought experiment question. If it were true, as some people say, that hell doesn't really exist, or that nobody really goes there, or that we can hope that everybody goes to heaven, well, then ask yourself this question. Why would Our Lady show hell to these three children? What would be the point of it? Why would she show hell filled with people, the souls of the damned, if it wasn't really true? I mean, I guess that would mean that Our Lady was lying, wouldn't it? That's not going to fly, obviously. So the reason that she showed the children hell is so that they could propagate that message to the rest of us and we'd be aware of it so that we could avoid it. So we could do what Jesus Christ said to do, which is to love God with all your heart, mind, and strength and love your neighbor as yourself. If you do that, you will not go to hell. So just a thought. Then you can see that volcano again on my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. Let's see. Let's go now. Cyrus, who are we going to go to? We have an embarrassment of riches here.
Elvira in Ceres, California.
Very good. Elvira in Ceres, California. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. My question is, I know there's many denominations out there and stuff, but one that I've came across that has caught my attention a little bit has been the Orthodox. Are they similar to Catholic? Is there a lot of difference mm-hmm. between the Orthodox and the Catholic Church? And the only reason I'm asking is because I have a coworker who's Orthodox, and she says that they're the actual true faith. They're the actual mm-hmm. faith that Jesus left, not the Catholic Church. That's right. Something where we're wrong at and we need to fix. So that kind of worried me a little bit because I'm raised Catholic. Mm-hmm. But I've been growing more into my faith more and more, and I thought, you know, you can never know enough about the Catholic faith, but it just kind of like now made me question my faith. Mm-hmm. Like, what am I doing? Is this true? You know, so mm-hmm.
Well, let me help. Okay, let me help. And it's an important question. Okay, so that's the standard response you can accept, or you can expect rather, when you meet an Eastern Orthodox believer, because that's what they're taught. They're taught that they are the original Christianity, when in fact they are and they're not. So there's a truth and an untruth there at the same time. The actual truth is, as overwhelmingly proven by the historical evidence, is that the Eastern Orthodox churches that we think of today, they broke away from the Catholic Church. They broke communion with the Catholic Church, and in particular with the Bishop of Rome, in the 11th century. So that's when the definitive break took place. Now, prior to that, for the first 1,000 years, all those churches that we think of as the Eastern Orthodox churches, some of which did not exist, I mean, none of them existed at the very beginning, but as they came into existence, they were all part of the Catholic Church. They were all under the jurisdiction of the Bishop of Rome. Now, sometimes there were squabbles and fights, and some of them didn't like it. The Archbishop of Constantinople, John the Faster, at one point, he proclaimed himself as having a status above all the other bishops, including over the Pope, because he said that the seat of the empire had moved from Rome under the reign of the Emperor Constantine. This would have been in the 4th century, and he moved the seat of the empire from Rome to a little fishing village called Byzantium that Constantine had built into this magnificent, wonderful, beautiful, and very large walled city that became known as Constantinople. And so that's where one of the key controversies arose, which was that that archbishop claimed that he now is the pope because, as he reasoned, it was because that's where the empire was. And the Bishop of Rome said no, and the preponderance of bishops agreed with him. No, the Bishop of Rome is the pope because that's where St. Peter was martyred. So St. Peter, the first pope, ministered there with St. Paul, and under the Emperor Nero, he was martyred. And so his successor, the Bishop of Rome, is the pope. Now, there's vast evidence that demonstrates that this is true, and the music says I can't tell you about it. So do me a favor. This is important. Stand by. And when we return from this quick timeout, I'll share with you just a smidgen of that evidence and where you can find more, and maybe one or two other thoughts about what the differences are between Catholics and the Eastern Orthodox. Suffice to say, they broke away from the Catholic Church, not the other way around. I'll be right back right after this.